If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 157, the best of 2020, where we're going to tell you the things that we think were great for 2020, which has been a hard year. I'm Chris, and with me today is...
Paul.
Sean.
Matt.
Well, welcome, guys. And Sean definitely said we're 25% more for this episode, and I said we were 50% less because it's light, Sean, now.
Actually, I should say I'm 10 pounds heavier, though, so...
Oh, so it's... We're
more material in the same package.
More mass. So, like I said, 2020 has been a tough year for everybody, some more than others, but there actually have been some good things about 2020. If you're an introvert, it was probably the best year of your life. But since I'm a tech guy... Most of the things I picked were, well, there were two social things out of the five things that I picked, and three things were tech. So I'll start off with one of them, the death of the movie theater. I actually think that is a good thing. It was something that was already happening, and Sean's...
Have you not sat in the seats in Huber Tucky's movie theater, man?
I was going to say that.
I'm drinking a beer, lounging back, feet up, watching Star Wars. Now, how is that a bad thing?
Because I can't, if I want a second beer, I have to get up and miss part of the movie. If I have to go pee because I drink two beers, I have to get up and miss part of the movie.
Just because you can't plan ahead, that's why you buy more than one beer.
Oh, is that it?
And you sneak... Take 4 or 5 in your jacket.
But I mean, all that COVID really did was it hastened something that was already going on. Something that the movie industry is going through right now is what the music industry went through back in the late 90s, early 2000s, when we went from, you know, CDs and tapes to digital music and how to distribute that digital music. And look at it today. I mean, back then, you were buying DRM, you know, encoded copies of individual songs, which was great because you could buy that one song that out of that whole album that was only significant to you. You know, today now you subscribe to a music service and you can download and pick that one song and, you know, and... Then a new song comes out and you can download and pick that and you pay a flat fee per month and it's become more like a utility than it is. And for a large part, TV has certainly gone that direction. When you look at Google TV and YouTube TV and Netflix and Amazon Prime and CBS All Access, and you know, everybody's got a streaming service today. And I expect at some point we're going to see a consolidation of that again, because... You know, now if you have all the streaming services, you're paying what it would be to just have cable with all of the premium channels. So,
but so let me challenge, before you get on the streaming part, let me challenge you. I liken it to this. Do you go to a restaurant? The answer is yes. Can you cook at home? The answer is yes. Yet you go to the restaurant for the experience of going to the restaurant. I liken a movie theater to that. I go to a movie theater. Could I wait a month and wait till the movie comes out on video? I can do that. I could have done that 5 years ago. That's not a problem. I go to the movie theater for the movie theater experience, not because of the movie itself necessarily.
But see,
I see certain movies there. But again, it's like a restaurant.
How often do you? When I was a kid, I went to the movie.
I go a couple times a year. I'm not saying I
went to the movie theater. At one point, when I was about 12 years old, I went at least twice a week. Sometimes more than that.
Well, that's great. Some people go to restaurants 5-6 times a week
today,
also. But that doesn't mean the restaurants are going away because we can cook at home or because we have DoorDash now.
But that today, I only go to the movie theater unless they're... And if they offered a new Star Wars movie at the movie theater, you would not see me go at all. But only because the last movie I saw in the movie theater was the last Star Wars movie. And before that... It was probably the last Star Wars movie before that, you know.
I guess I go more for the experience.
Well, I just
get excited. If I go to the movie theater, I get excited. Hey, I'm in a movie theater. I don't go because it's a
The only reason to go to a movie theater, in my opinion, is to see a movie. And this is today, you know, my feelings as of today, is to see it because there's a social aspect to it, which COVID has kind of killed, you know. But I don't like sitting next to people I don't know. I like to be able to pause a movie when I need to go to get up, get a snack. I was not buying snacks in the movie theater just because the cost was outrageous. The tickets were, even if you were paying full price, many times the tickets were cheaper than just a small bucket of popcorn and a small pop.
I do the same thing in a restaurant. If I get, a bourbon, I can get one bourbon at a restaurant that costs me for the fifth at home, but I still go to the restaurant.
I don't liken it for the same reason.
Well, I mean, and that's personal preference.
It is personal preference.
Can't really argue that. That's my point.
But the other thing that's happened, too.
But is there enough people left like you, Sean, to warrant...
Every time I've gone to a movie theater before pre-COVID, there were people there, yeah.
But in a post-COVID world, is that still the case?
But even pre-COVID...
Because that's really what the industry is responding to, is COVID.
Well, think about this. So Regal Cinemas, which was owned by, and I can't remember the company out of Great Britain, they're dead. They've completely shut down. They're not going to reopen. AMC has just said that they are going to shut down and not
reopen. Cinemark is right behind them.
Yeah. Well, Cinemark is owned by AMC. Okay. Again, they were sold and then rebought, I believe. So that's going to leave Cineopolis. And I don't know. They're.
Well, and Cineopolis was really Rave. About the experience.
Well, Rave is owned by AMC, so likely... Now, I can see some of these surviving... because, again, the market's not totally dead, and there will be reasons to go see, you know, something that has huge practical or digital effects, some kind of big thing, but, you know, to go see...
events.
Yeah, see events.
Like a new Marvel movie or something.
Yeah,
like
I don't think that will go away, but even that with Disney Plus and the way they're doing things, I think that's not the way the movie theater or the movie studios are going to go. I think you're going to find that there's going to be far, far less theatrical movie releases as we go forward because they've switched their ideology and their infrastructure to doing a digital streaming service.
Why are the movie companies holding so many movies back right now, waiting for the movie theaters to open rather than just releasing their stuff?
Because they spent too much money on them.
Yeah.
Going forward... These production companies will not spend what they're spending on blockbuster movies.
That doesn't answer my question, though. James Bond right now is pushed back to April. Why don't you just release it now if the movie theater experience is going away?
Well, I think there's
because they're holding out hope.
Well, I think Matt,
COVID's
you're right.
COVID's going to be over, and we're going to go back to normal, whatever that is. And I just don't see that happening.
Well, you have to look at it too. There's other factors. So there is that, Matt. I think that's part of it. They spend a lot of money, and they spend a lot of marketing money, which is a good portion of it. Because movie theaters don't actually or movie companies don't actually make the movies. They are distributors. They do invest in the movies to get made. But it's, you know, when you see the small labels that come up after the Universal, and then it's, you know, Bad Robot, if it's a J.J. Abrams movie, you know. Yeah. And the LLC's, Bad Robot's the one who actually makes the movie.
Yeah.
But the other thing is I think there's some contractual obligations because they had, as part of contracts that they had put in place before COVID happened, they agreed to put movies out. And Disney's in lawsuits right now over Mulan because they didn't release Mulan live action. And so... These movie theater companies actually spent money co-marketing with them for the release of these movies that they didn't get to show.
Well, yeah, I mean, movies have become non-money makers, which is the whole reason behind why all these comics have come to life.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the merchandise,
but
everything that's sold.
The other thing that's happened is...
They buy the rights to that.
Okay, go ahead, Sean.
Okay, I'm going to throw another analogy then. You brought the music industry, and I wholeheartedly agree the music industry has changed, right? How we did it 20 years ago, they're not making money off an album, they're not making money off a CD, it's streamed and so on. Do people still go to concerts?
That's totally different.
Why is that totally different?
Because
versus
well, music.
I go to a concert not because the music sounds great. I can make it sound greater in my living room. I go for the experience. I pay overpriced beers, overpriced snacks, and I still go to a concert. And concerts, by the way, are making more money than they ever have.
Sean, and I would agree with you if you were talking about a stage play rather than a movie.
Yeah.
A movie has a consistent performance. Every time, a concert does not.
No, I'm not talking about the. I'm not talking about the performance in the media. I'm talking about the idea of I go to a movie theater for the theater experience, not the movie.
But I'll tell you a big difference between a concert and a movie theater experience is a concert, although might be related to an artist who released an album through Arista Records or, RCA Nashville or whoever, but RCA Nashville and them are not the promoters of the concerts, and they're also not the people who reap the benefits. The people who the actual people who take the money home are the artists themselves, and that's where they make the most of their money. They make fractions of a cent on a stream or a radio play or anything like that. So part of the reason concerts are that way, one, almost if it's any major group, but because I tend to go to smaller concerts because I like niche players, you know. But if it's a big concert, like where you tend to go, you're seeing like AC/DC and these guys, they're taking home the take, but also it's an event. It's the same reason we talk about going to, you know, the reason to go to a movie is some, you know, some big Star Trek or Star Wars, you know, mega adventure, Marvel's, you know,
eight. How many midnight shows I went to Harry Potter?
Yeah, exactly.
Kids dressed up.
Exactly. Yeah. That's more like a concert. But, you know, to see a lot of these movies out there today that have been put out, they're not like that, you know.
Here's the thing. When you say for the experience, do you mean the social experience and the technological experience, or one or the other?
Well, for me, it's both, but I can also see where some people's technology, maybe in their home, are better than a movie theater.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But there are certain movies that I have to see on the big screen, right?
Exactly.
But I argue with part of that, though, because 4K TVs have the price technologically has just gone foomp.
Well, that's
it's like a reverse hockey stick.
So, if I just had a regular 55-inch Vizio TV, I don't want to see the next Top Gun movie on that. Right. I want to go see it where it's shaking the seats in the theater. Now, I also, in my other house, I have a 75-inch 4K with full Sonos surround. When I fired that baby up, I think I got what I want.
Yeah, well, that's
in the house.
More people are that way.
Yeah,
you know, I'm the same way. Our 55-inch Hitachi 4K in October bit the dust. It had the red blink of death that you can't repair it. And when I went out to buy a new TV, I'm like, oh my God, the prices are like nothing. So we ended up with a 75-inch, and we have a Samsung, and we have a Samsung surround sound system. And I sit there and I watch Discovery every week on it, and I'm like, I'm never going to go to a movie theater again.
I feel that same way. But then again, I also think there's certain events that it's fun to go out and have that experience. And now with that new lounger, it's pretty cool.
I don't find those.
I don't have that in my house yet.
No, but I want one.
I don't find those, because I've been to many of those. I've been down to Rookwood Commons. I've been to Austin Landing in Cineopolis, who has it. Been to the Green where the Rave has it. Been to what's that down on in Cincinnati and where you used to be.
Doesn't matter.
But
make your point.
I've gone to all those. I don't find their seats that comfortable. Those seats that they have, I'd rather sit on my couch. And if I want people, I'm going to the movie with the people I want to be around with anyway. So if I want to make it an event, you know, my kids and my wife and, you know, my mom and my aunt, and, you know, we're all going to get together and see the movie anyway, because they're the same people that we're going to go to the movie theater for and watch it. And, you know, again, the advantages of much better food choices, even at some of those places who've gotten high end, much better drink choices. You can pause it. You can go to the bathroom. You know,
you that could just be high on your list. Yeah, controllability. I like that.
I mean, I find it much better. Yeah. The other thing that's happened, and so you had Disney with Mulan at home, and you had Apple TV did the Trolls World Tour, which I had no interest in seeing anyway, where they tried to do the pay-per-view type thing. You know, I mean, you're going to pay extra money for it.
Yeah, it was Mulan like $30 or something.
Well, it was $30, but you got it for 48 hours. Yeah. You know, that was about what you would get charged if you paid for movie tickets for four people at full price. That didn't work out. And so they're still fiddling with that. If they're going to do that, they're still fiddling with that thing. But now you have Warner Brothers saying that, look, we're going to theatrically release all of our movies for 2021, starting with Wonder Woman 1984, which was pushed back on Christmas Day. But by the way, if you subscribe to HBO Max, who, by the way, owns Warner Brothers, or Warner Brothers owns HBO Max is what I should say, you can stream all those movies for no additional cost. You know, so you're getting, it's not Netflix or Amazon Prime new releases now, which some of them have been excellent, I have to say.
Yeah.
Although the bird one was weird.
The bird one?
Yeah. With Sandra Bullock, that was weird.
Oh, yeah, that was a strange movie. Yeah.
Bird Box? Or
yeah, Bird Box, something like that.
I just finished watching
But
Queen's Gambit.
But, yeah. But you know, that whole concept of now getting theatrical releases at home, that's a game changer. And I think Warner Brothers might have hit upon, you know, and there's a reason they did it, that outside of the whole movie thing, HBO Max wasn't getting a lot of subscribers, because the people who were subscribing to HBO Max were only interested in being subscribers. Just kind of like a lot of the Disney Plus subscribers canceled Disney Plus when the end of the Mandalorian season 1 happened.
Yeah.
That's what happened when some of their premium shows.
My wife's threatening, but I haven't got through Mandalorian yet, season 1.
and so...
only episode 2.
Actually...
You got a long way to go, brother.
We're toying with pausing Netflix for a while because they haven't been really pumping out anything really good. Even their shows.
I struggle to find good feature movies.
I don't even watch it anymore.
I surfed the other night for 30 minutes and couldn't find something to watch.
Yeah, and so we were thinking, well, we'll drop Netflix and we'll pick up HBO Max, and then at least we'll get to see all the, you know, the Warner Brothers new releases.
That's not a bad idea.
And so, you know, I think you're going to see a lot of people that way. Do I think movie theater? I say death of the movie theater. Long live the movie theater. I mean...
Tom Cruise was calling last night.
I think it's happening. Well, I mean, look at what was his movie that came out on Apple TV that was phenomenal? The World War II naval movie.
The one with Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That was a good movie.
I like that movie. That was action. Nice, concise, action-packed movie.
And that was theatrical release quality.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it was worth it to crank up the surround.
And yeah, exactly.
Watch it in 4K.
And so, you know, I think we're going to see a move to that. Now, will all movie theaters die? No. I think largely this is a severe consolidation of the market. Those guys who who got overextended, like AMC and Regal.
You still have people who will go to a record store and buy vinyl.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, the niche cinema is still going to still be there.
Yes.
Sean, you'll still have a place to go.
It just may not be that Rave or Cinemark in Huber Heights. But I think that opens up some things, too. Places where, you know, even post-COVID, when we can think about that in 4 or 5 years, places where there's a high population demand for that type of thing, that allows the mom and pop to come back and do it again, which is the way it was. And maybe they'll do it bigger, better, and smarter. You know, one of the revolutions for when movie theaters started, at you know, started to proliferate at the turn of the century, was the fact that the projectors came down in cost, that they could, so that you know, you could own one and make money on it. And what happened with the rise of AMC and Regal and all these big movie theater chains is that they pushed it to a digital model where you couldn't afford the digital systems. And now there's new digital systems that are much cheaper that the mom and pop can now afford,
I mean,
and stream these movies just like the big players do.
People put movies out on iPhones that look, some of them look incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously doing some good digital editing.
Okay.
But it's available.
So since my topic, first topic of the best of 2020, I'll let Sean pick next since he was the most offended.
I wasn't offended. I just disagree with him.
You know your mic's off, Sean.
I turned it off.
You never turned it on. No, up here. That's why we use multiple mics, because Sean was still getting picked up.
Big change that I think will continue, and it's a benefit, is telehealth. I think that this idea of I get the sniffles and I have to go into a doctor's office and get reimbursed or get analyzed or get probed and prodded when I just need some penicillin is going by the wayside.
That's not the sniffles, that's the drip.
That's right. That's getting picked up. I think we're getting better at it. I think it's.
Do you think they're going to make webcams more clean or sanitary?
Yeah, I think that's the next step, is to make sure the webcams don't get cloudy, right? no, but I think that's going to help in a couple different ways. One of the things it obviously helps is the consumer, right? So the consumer, I can get, again, most of the times I go to the doctor's office are for very routine type things, even like blood draws, you know, and stuff that I don't need to have a 30-minute appointment for. And that drives healthcare costs up, right? The other thing is, you know, when you talk to doctors, they can't afford a push toward universal healthcare because they can't get the quantity of people through on the money that they're going to make for that. Well, I can now see 10 people an hour by telehealth and get through it, and the cost model becomes a lot more advantageous. Previously, we just haven't had the ability or the bandwidth to do that. I think that is an excellent push and a very good use of technology in the future. That's mine.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think probably 99% of the cases or 90% of the cases that come through a doctor's office, even if they're just a general practitioner, are routine, and it's something that they don't need to have you physically in the room to be able to diagnose you for. You know, come in for a sinus infection, my wife has had so many sinus infections, she just calls a doctor anymore, and they go, you have a sinus infection? Okay, we'll call Kroger's and have a Z-Pack and something else for you there.
Right.
You know, and that's what a lot of these calls will be. And so they can get through them. Because before this, telehealth, doctor's offices, because you could only afford so many doctors, were then getting nurse practitioners and physician's assistants. And so a lot of these low-level things were being handled by them. But that still drove up the cost. You know, you might be able to afford a physician's assistant and a nurse practitioner on what you'd pay another doctor. You know, and so there was an advantageous price position for profit there. Mm-hmm. I think you're right, Sean. You know, doctor may not even have to go that route anymore.
Right.
Now the problem comes with specialists.
Yeah.
Yes, specialists.
I had a nurse practitioner
for the movie theaters for that and see them there.
That's a great idea.
Because the building's gonna be open.
That's a good point. I had a nurse practitioner for endocrinology, and when COVID hit and they started doing telehealth, the endocrinologist actually ended up cutting her from the practice because now he needed to cut costs and all of that. but he wouldn't see me. He wouldn't take me on as a patient. So now I'm without an endocrinologist. You know, so I'm back to like, well, what do I do? I don't know.
Well, I mean, it also illustrates another point that we have, that universal healthcare, it just as a side note to this, is that we don't have enough health professionals anyway.
No, that's exactly right.
You know,
ultimately, why that will fail is because of that.
Exactly.
Not because of political.
But telehealth will at least help us scale that, you know, with the current health professionals we have.
Absolutely.
But no, that's a good one, Sean. Thumbs up to you.
That's all I got.
Paul?
So one of the, you know, mine's kind of along the same lines as, you know, from COVID, this post-COVID era or this new era that we're entering. And it's something I just saw the other day, just came out the other day, and that's Apple's Fitness Plus.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, you look at all these gyms that are closed and so forth, so I think Apple's, if this thing works, I don't know a lot about it, but they may have nailed something, you know, to set up a home gym.
Well, it's that access to the personal trainers.
Exactly.
That you get. And I mean,
yeah.
It's not just Apple. Apple's hitting the home fitness market, but Lululemon bought that company who made the mirror.
You got the mirror, you got Peloton.
You have Zwift.
You got Zwift, which is not, that's what I'm using because I ride a bike.
Now, one of the things I anticipate is because Zwift is a software piece, and then they work with other hardware vendors. Because they use Run is the company they use. It's a universal sensor that you put on your treadmill so that you can run or run. Because that Zwift is strictly run, walk, and biking.
Right. And Chris and I just recently set up, he helped me build a machine, desktop to hook up to Zwift. I've got a smart trainer. It's a subscription service. You know, I'm virtually riding with other people. Getting a lot of benefit out of that. Zwift actually announced last week, I think, they're going to build a bike.
Oh, are they?
They're actually
That'd be nice.
Hardware.
Yeah, but well,
this,
I mean,
this industry's gonna
Zwift
grow.
And Peloton.
This home industry.
And Apple already had something that before Fitness Plus that was part of a subset of HealthKit, their APIs, that was called, I forget what it was called. I was looking it up the other day because I was trying to see if how hard it was to make the run sensor work with Apple Fitness Plus.
Yeah, you probably know more about than I do,
and,
because I just started looking
but,
at it, but I think it could be.
They had worked with Peloton and then like the big fitness machine, you know, like you'd find the commercial stuff that you find at the gyms. And basically, you take your Apple Watch and you would put it in front of a sensor there, and it would sync your Apple Watch to the sensors that were built into the either the Peloton bike or the commercial gym equipment. And then when you worked out, it would measure additional things that your Apple Watch doesn't catch. And then your Apple Watch was also feeding other, you know, like your heartbeat and your, you know, all the information they capture back into the health machine, and then storing it on your Apple Watch so that you had a much more large fitness routine.
Well, the other thing that was interesting too, because I was talking to my brother who lives in Seattle, having some health issues, and so I asked him, and he works for Microsoft, he's been working at home for a long time, and I asked him, I said, are you doing anything, you getting up, you getting some exercise in? No, not really. I need some motivation. Is there any kind of an app or a program, he asked me that, any kind of an app or a program you know of that, like, you and I could, like, motivate each other? And Apple Fitness Plus
has
that feature that where you can look on that watch, you can set it up with a buddy.
Exactly.
And say,
sure.
I've done this workout, have you done it? And compare yourselves and so forth. You know,
yeah.
They can be on to something.
Oh, absolutely.
Because a lot of people aren't going to go back into gyms for a while.
No.
Well,
and particularly if you look at how we're rolling out the COVID vaccine, unfortunately, the people like us who have to be out in the world and do things are not going to get access to that vaccine first. I mean, I do believe first responders and hospital people definitely should get it first, but I'm not so sure that...
See, I disagree. I think politicians should get it first. That way, in case there are side effects, it takes takes them out.
But would we notice?
Oh, I'd notice.
I find myself rewatching The Walking Dead for
some reason.
It's weird. So weird.
But that's mine. That's good for mine.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's really good. Matt?
So, much like you, I think there is going to be a death of the traditional Cube Farm office space.
So I actually had that on my list as well. I just said working from home.
Working from home, I think, is going to be the big thing to come out of this. There's no way. You know, 10 years ago, I was working for a software company in a Cube Farm, and I was telling them, there's no reason for me to be here. I can do this job from home. I can save you some money, and I can not have the hassle of coming in here every day. And they just couldn't wrap their heads around that.
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, for the last 17 years, well, I went from working in a Cube Farm at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base to working from home with a two-year-old. Well, no, she wasn't even two yet. So about an 18-month-old. But once I got through that mental process of making the change and, you know, making – it was a much more convenient process. Now, not every job, you know, even office job, can you work from home. And I also think, although I have a love-hate relationship with con calls/Zoom meetings/Microsoft Teams meetings, sometimes you'll get in a meeting and everybody's in the zone on like Microsoft Teams and it just works. And you saved a lot of time and everything else. But even before, when I worked at the Air Force, it was a meeting culture. And I think it still is because Paul still works for the Air Force and it's a meeting culture. And the more often you have con calls and stuff, the more often people are zoned out. I mean, my ADHD shows up exactly when about minute 15 starts of any con call. Because I'm like, by that time my brain's zoned out. And I have been caught many a time playing guitar while sitting there thinking my phone was on mute. Might be why I don't work for my previous employer, maybe. No, I'm just kidding.
Blow up some of the Zoom calls, especially with our company's Zoom calls, there'll be hundreds of people. And lots of people turn their cameras on. So I'll blow the grid up. I have to sit there and kind of look around. And I think, I'm not really listening to the meeting.
Yeah,
just
I know.
Just looking at people's like living rooms. And
Well, one of the things that we've gotten in my company, the executive team, we've been playing with the backgrounds in Microsoft Teams. And so, like, I have main engineering and of discovery as my background.
Yeah.
And my boss has Yellowstone National Park. So we sit there and we're texting back and forth while we're on these calls with people going, hey, that's a cool picture. Where'd you get that one from?
But truth be told, I zone out in meetings on base.
You know, sometimes there are actual reasons you need to meet, particularly if it's a small group. It's hard to get productivity done in a small group setting if there's only four or five people and you're trying to assign action items.
Where Synchrony, I know somebody works for Synchrony, and what they're going to do is they just blew up their headquarters here, and they're all going to work from home, but they're actually going to rent space. They're going to have space, and they're looking at Wright State right now. Collaborative space that's going to be owned, or rent, I'm sorry, it's going to be rented by them or by somebody else, that they can go in for an hour meeting.
Exactly, and I think that's common of what's gone.
Wayne, that's not new either. I mean, that's been around for a couple of years as a concept.
But I mean,
but I think it's going to be much more prevalent than
like
it
Synchrony,
was before.
Right when COVID hit, REI, you know, the outdoor people, they had built a brand new headquarters and they were getting ready to move into that headquarters. And since they had to send everybody home, they found that they were just as productive than. So they never moved into their new headquarters, and they actually sold the property off. And that's actually
Lexus.
Yeah.
LexisNexis is selling four out of their six buildings right now.
Yeah. Exactly.
But you know, it's funny because I'm noticing this right now with us sitting here talking to each other, and this is one problem I see in the virtual meeting space is that people tend to talk over each other a lot more in the virtual. But the fact that we can see each other, we're not talking over each other as much.
Well, there's cues. We can give hand
cues.
And yeah, exactly.
I sit in so many meetings and people are like, brr, no, you go. No, you go. Brr, no, you go. Yeah.
What
yeah.
I think is the longer the Zoomization of online meetings continues, that culture will develop, I think.
Well, I think
it will, but then also long-term studies may prove it's not good. Humans are social beings. Even introverts are social beings. And going to the grocery store once a week doesn't constitute social in my aspect. So sometimes getting out of the house.
Well,
there's a reason why
that's part of the reason
experience trauma when they don't, and I'm being serious, they experience trauma when they don't get to leave. Because they're with the kids all day long and they're never allowed to leave the house, for instance. And we know long term that that's not healthy. Now you put people in work situations that are like that, that's not going to be healthy either. So you got to have a balance, but again, that hasn't really played itself out yet.
Well, I think what happens too, though, is there's a couple other things that they have found. And just to your point, Sean, part of the reason I do these podcasts in person, we could easily stream it. I know how to do all the technology, and we could stream it over the internet and stuff. Although there are issues with that too, you know, when you're going, particularly the greater the number of people, the harder it is to get that to work smoothly enough to make a good recording. But one of the things that, and I learned this a long time ago, is there's a lot of downtime at work. If you're sitting at a desk and you've kind of got all your tasks done, or you're waiting on somebody before you can do the next thing. So a lot of people, you know, the internet kind of helped that culture a little bit, because people could sit around and browse, and, you know, women would shop for shoes online. And did I make a sexist remark? Yes, I did.
Yes, yes. He retracts that statement.
No, he doesn't.
Somebody's going to diversity training online next week.
What does that have to do with diversity? But the working from home, you know, somebody can get their work done. They can also work in it when it's more comfortable. I you know, think about when I went to the base and worked every day. I would get up at like 5:30 a.m. I'd be on the road at six o'clock and be in my seat, or be in the colonel's office for meetings at 6:30 every day. But I had an hour of get up and get ready time, and a half hour and travel time to get to work. And then I'm there, and then I have the reverse home, you know.
You drive in reverse all the way home?
Yeah.
What the hell? I never got pulled over?
No. Actually, I got multiple gears put in my transmission in reverse, so it made it easier. Yeah.
But
you know, that cut into my productivity time and leisure time at home.
Yeah.
And you take that out and you find that people are getting to work earlier in the day. They're getting more done. They're also, if they're waiting on something, then they can go and they can, you know, do something that they need to do at the house, or run an errand that they need to do. Because the ironic thing I find totally ironic is that banks, which everybody has to deal with, are open during business hours when you're at work, almost exclusively. And if you're lucky enough to be able to leave work, or your workday ends early enough, you might have an hour to get to the bank to actually do some actual banking. You know?
And don't get me wrong from my comment. I'm not saying I disagree. In fact, I totally agree with all you. I'm just saying there's another aspect that we haven't experienced.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
I think it's going to end up being a mess.
Yeah.
That's what's going to be the balance.
Well,
they're going to say, look, pick your days, but you're going to come in the office 2 days a week, or 3 days a week.
Exactly. Well, the last 17 years, I've worked from home. And that work balance is, yeah, sometimes we go and we travel and we met in places and had meetings in offices. Where we had to have either it was information that a large group of people needed to be at and interact with.
But you traveled a lot.
I did. I've always traveled 2 to 3 days.
And you did a lot of face to face with customers.
Yes.
You helped me get into the same situation. Yes. And I was like, wow, this is great, man. I can't believe I was going into that cube every day.
Oh, I know.
But then the other side of that is you're working on. You've got the freedom. Stop work during the day, like I can go ride my bike or whatever, as long as I'm monitoring my communications, right?
Sure.
But then again, I might be up at 10, 11, getting emails.
Well, that thing too, if you have time,
11 o'clock.
Well, so, and that's another drawback, right? Now employers are going to expect you to be tethered 24/7.
Exactly.
When I worked for GM and I left at 5,
you were down.
Please don't call me because you ain't getting an answer.
Right.
You
know? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be a change.
Yeah. I mean, and there are some jobs that are going to remain that way too.
My boss texted me at 9:30 last night just because he saw me on the computer.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I don't have. Well, exactly. I figure it's a trade. And some days, you know, I'm monitoring my email. Like this time of year is such a waste, particularly when you deal with federal government on a day to day basis. Because
this time of year.
Yeah. Well, one, there's hardly anybody.
I find it a waste to work with federal government. Ends in Y.
Yeah.
And state government and local government, and county government.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make sense of it. Maybe all right.
But no, I agree with you. But you know, it's like the ability, like tomorrow, all of my customers are done for the year. I've already talked to them all this week, and it's like, yeah, we're off until, you know, after New Year's.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm still getting. Well, I don't get paid hourly
in
the
24th of national holiday.
Yeah. But, you know, my time will be mine for the most part to do whatever I want, you know, as long as you know, the burden of monitoring email is so light now. You know, it's not like I have to stop what I'm doing, go find a computer and sit down and log in and do all this stuff. It's on my phone. It's on my watch, you know. So, you know, it's a trade-off I'll happily accept at this point.
Yeah, I think that there is going to have to be that balance, though, like you're saying, with the social interaction. I'm working with people now that I've never met. And I told them one day, I said, I have no idea what you even look like. If I saw you in a grocery store, I wouldn't know who you were.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But yet we talk every day. It's kind of bizarre. And they won't turn their cameras on and they won't put pictures up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's really strange and different. It's like they'd like to, maybe we could get together.
Well, sometimes I don't turn my camera on because I don't feel like putting pants on, you know.
I've seen some funny videos on that.
We had an incident. A good friend of mine at UD demands that all the students turn their cameras on. During one of his classes, he had the student's roommate came out of the shower behind him but was in the camera view. And he quickly saw it and turned that kid's camera off. But I guess that's why I don't necessarily care if the students have their cameras on or not. That happened all semester.
Well, I'm going to combine two of mine because they're really the same thing. But this is a technological thing that it started last year. Yeah, it's been a slow moving thing, but that is moving away from Intel, the x86 architecture, to ARM architectures for all of our computing. Apple's move to their custom-built M1 architecture, the Raspberry Pi 4 and the Pi 400 that came out in 2020 upped the game for personal computing that took you out of that Chromebook and smartphone realm, you know, running real desktop OSs, running real desktop apps. As a matter of fact, this is a M1, Apple M1 MacBook Pro that we're recording the podcast on today, and it blows away my Core i9 other MacBook Pro on the Intel architecture, and it's half, if you put them spec to spec, it's half the memory.
What's the price point on that at this point?
So mine is not the stock, but the price points are fairly reasonable. They're still, if you're a budget PC, if like you were the person who bought a $300 PC and lived with it for a year and then bought another $300 PC.
I bought a $300 PC and I'm still using it 10 years later.
Yeah, well.
I mean, that's what I'm getting at. That technology is not going to hit me until.
But you don't run things like Logic. You don't run things like Adobe Creative Cloud.
Who does? But maybe you too.
My son has to do it.
Well.
And like Wolfram Mathematica and MATLAB and all that, which my daughter has to run.
MATLAB, yeah.
I mean, That's real. I mean, and you know, I'm a hardware junkie.
But what I'm getting at though is that your average human being isn't going to
but
take.
But that's an Apple M1. It's a premium product. Raspberry Pi, which you can run Windows for ARM on, you can run a whole bunch of Linuxes on, and the Pi 400. I've been playing with the latest version of Ubuntu on ARM, which is free. Those are less than $100. A Pi 400 kit is $129, and that includes your video cable, your mouse. The Pi 400 is a keyboard. The computer's built in the keyboard and all the IOs on the back. And it includes the 16 gig memory card that runs as the hard disk. It's like $80.
So look, my PC now is mostly for web browsing, Zoom, and playing games on Steam.
Yeah.
Now, and there are games that I would be playing on Steam that I can't play on Steam because my computers are freaking old.
Yeah.
At some point, though, this technology is going to be cheap enough that I'm going to have one.
Well, you could have one today. Like I said...
We could do what I did. We put another $300 into my desktop.
Yeah.
Now it's up to speed.
But I'm saying the gamut is there for desktop power. The place where it got bridged was actually where Google started with the Chromebooks. The first Chromebooks, the first Samsung Chromebook and the first Acer Chromebooks, which were the popular ones, they were really kind of underpowered. And then as a lot of those, depending on the manufacturer, they either use, like the Raspberry Pi uses a Broadcom ARM processor, the Microsoft Surface Pro X, which is Apple type prices, runs on Samsung Snapdragons. And then you have some Chromebooks and stuff in there in the middle that run on Snapdragons and Broadcoms and various things. But the price is again, like the Intel market, you span the gamut. The advantages are you're getting, like the Apple M1 chips, you're getting better performance than a comparable Intel chip. You're actually getting better performance than, like, chips that shouldn't be comparable, you know, that are like the next steps up. But you're getting, like, 3 times the battery life on the same battery. They're staying cool, so they run faster, longer, without having to throttle, particularly in a laptop-type form factor. And they're able to handle all the everyday tasks, you know, office, web browsing, mail, Zoom meetings, and things like that. But even the Raspberry Pi 4, you can run GIMP on it. It's not optimized for that just because you don't have enough memory, because they max out at 8 gig of memory. But it certainly runs GIMP if you needed to edit some photos you took off your digital camera. But this is where we're moving. From a compute perspective, it started with the smartphone market, and you know it's always that thing where you get a market where it proliferates, and then because we're making so many of them, the cost takes the specialty technology down, and then other industries can start moving in there because iteration after iteration it gets better, and everything has a. Almost everything we use on a day-to-day basis, except maybe a fork and a spoon, I'm sure they'll get changed here soon too, have some sort of processing capability. Your car, you know, most doorbells today. I mean, the little security cameras that you put in your windows. I mean,
well, with the mic's off on that thing.
You know, the keychain for your car. Not only the entertainment system computer, but then you have the body control module and the powertrain control module. I mean, and those are things that have been there for a long time. But now people are just starting to realize that their life is becoming totally digital. This is going to make the proliferation of that even greater as we move to the ARM architecture. But it's also going to make things smaller and more power efficient, which is part of where we have to go if, and this is what I call a big if, we're being forced to, you know, go green because of the climate change ideology. Because the things that, the next big things that have to change, and it's starting to change because we're seeing the technology get better, are refrigerators and dryers. Things that use big AC motors in them. Those motors and the smart controllers for those are, that's the next big change you're going to see. And hopefully we're going to see, well, there's one of two things that's going to happen. Because right now we're already seeing refrigerator freezers that are shrinking in size. You know, 54-quart refrigerator freezer that runs on 12-volt DC at 4 amps, you know, which can be produced by your car. Hopefully we're going to start seeing that in a big refrigerator. But not only that, we're going to see an efficiency in refrigeration through a combination of smart controllers, so, you know, putting a computer in your refrigerator. Heck, our new washing machine connects to the internet and tells me when the washing is done, whether the load is imbalanced and it stopped the load or what. I mean, you think it's stupid, but it's really helpful because it's better than coming back 3 or 4 hours later and thinking that your wash is done and you flip the lid up and it's all soaking wet. You know.
Yeah, I don't know how far along the technology is, but I think there's a refrigerator out there that identifies the items.
There are. I mean, there's some things like that.
To try that.
But to me,
build like grocery lists for you and stuff like
that.
That's
more niche to me because a lot of that's based upon machine learning and AI, which has got a long way to go. We're nowhere near the point where, you know, we have to worry about a.
Come with me if you want to live.
Exactly. But the power efficiency thing is a big deal because power is going to get more expensive everywhere.
Well, I was happy to get the Google thermostat installed in my house. That's been working pretty well. The smart learning ones.
Yeah, I have a smart one too. I go up to it and I 65 degrees.
And then you're still manually hitting it?
Yeah, I don't ever let
Wait, so you manually hit that, but you have a fucking washing machine that goes to your watch and tells you when your load is imbalanced.
Exactly.
You snob. What the hell? My God. Yeah.
No, I just never got...
Programmable thermostats have been around for 30 years.
Well, we have a programmable thermostat, but it's one of the older ones. It's not a Nest. Which, although they say they're certified to work with fuel systems...
I would rather control the temperature environment of my home than my wash.
Yeah.
If I had to choose the two... Niche market. What the crap?
Well, no. The niche market is having your refrigerator start telling you you're out of milk. Yeah. That's more of a niche market. And those refrigerators, you can buy them at Sam's Club, but even at Sam's Club, those refrigerators are still like, you know, $4,000. They're on the very high-end refrigerators.
Yeah, but it's closer than you think because a lot of people now are switching to e-shopping.
It is true.
That allows that technology to link a lot
better.
If it was just generating a grocery list and I pulled it off a printer and walked the store, I'd say, screw that.
Yeah.
I leave but my post-it note on the fridge anyway.
Says, by the way, 5 o'clock on your way home. Pick this up. It's already ordered for you.
Or you better get it.
It shows up on your front step. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of the thing. You know, we have... I had to order some stuff from Walmart. One of them was a tire for the trailer because you can't go to their auto store and get it and have it delivered to the store. And so I ended up signing up because the shipping on the tire was like, you know how much a tire weighs.
That's great.
And so it ended up being free, so we joined the Walmart's version of Amazon Prime. And I've certainly gotten my money out of it. It's great. Even out, you know, we live out in the country, and I get online, I need milk and bread and toilet paper and... They, you know, when do you want it? And the delivery isn't same day. You can pick up same day, but delivery is never the same day. And you tell them between 7 and 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. And it's there, you know. And that is convenient. And, you know, years ago, Peapod was doing that in DC and Chicago and a couple other areas. where they were, they're doing that concierge shopping for you. You, they had an app, and you would get on the app, and I had a colleague who lived in the D.C. area, and she used it constantly. Mm-hmm. You know,
I ordered a phone holder. Just
speaking of that, the mailman came up while I was sitting here, and I think there's a coffee machine out there.
Yeah, my coffee maker. Cool. But I ordered a phone holder for my bike because my Zwift app also has a companion app, and I ordered it, I think, Monday afternoon, about 2-3 o'clock, and Tuesday at 4 o'clock I had it on the bike.
That's cool.
I was like, that's fast. Cool. Never did anything but open the front door.
Anybody else got anything else?
E-learning. As much as we complain, e-learning platforms have gotten this year have matured by necessity.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have tools this year now that I've never had before.
The tools have matured quickly, although there's been some backlash on some of the like proctoring tools.
There is. Technology-wise, they're advanced.
Yeah.
It's privacy and law and social aspects that there's the controversy.
Well, that kind of goes along with what Albert Einstein said. He said the ethics of technology is always 50.
Yeah.
Technology is always 50 years before ethics behind the use of the technology.
But here's where I think it's going to be good. We know, this is not an argument, we know that people learn their points. For instance, I might learn great in a 200-person classroom, you lecture to me, tell me how to do stuff, walk on. Other people, I need to be in a room by myself, one-on-one, and I need an hour more than you need to get through the material. This is going to allow you to tailor your learning in the future to how you learn. And I think that that's a benefit. And it also broke us, by the way, in a good way, us professors, but teachers, get into the mode of, I call it flashcard mentality. How do you learn something? Well, I'm going to give you 10 flashcards, memorize it. And boom. And so, for instance, all my classes now are project things because I don't have time to. You're not going to watch me for 50 minutes on a computer lecture. You're just not going to do it. So why would I waste my time doing it? So we do projects, and I teach you techniques on how to do those projects. And I had to break me into saying, okay, in this course, what is actually important? Is it important that you fill up the time period, or is it important that they know X? Is it important that they know Y? What do you want them to get out of this course? And historically, we've gotten lazy in that, like with spelling. Is it important that you know how to spell cat? The answer is no. Is it important that you learn the study habits on how to learn how to spell cat? The answer is yes. So spelling was, historically for all four of us, was get your spelling book out, memorize it on Friday, you're going to have the test, and move on, right? Those days are gone. Some people still learn that way, but those days are gone. It's more of a now. What is the end project? The end project is I want to be able to write a paper, for instance. Well, I'm going to start with the end in mind now. With these e-learning platforms now, I can start and work backwards, and maybe I need extra time to learn spelling. Maybe I'm not a native speaker. I need to learn spelling, right? Maybe you know spelling, but you need to know formatting more or whatever. And now we all four of us in the same classroom and listen to somebody tell you that. And that goes, by the way, all the way down to first grade.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because, you know, little Johnny decides to pull Jackie's hair, you know, now I don't have to worry about it.
That's how we've done it. Right?
One of the greatest.
Everybody along together.
Yes.
If you fell behind, you're falling behind the group.
You got it.
We didn't care what reason for
why. And the technology has helped us being able to do that. I even laugh at this, like, virtual field trips. We used to love field trips because we got out, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm never going to, you know, pick the Louvre, right? I'm never going to do that. And now I take my first graders to the Louvre in the classroom, right? And that's
have
awesome.
Discussions and
have discussions. Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the best ed classes I ever had, I don't know if you ever took the class with Gary Johnston down at NKU.
Mm-hmm.
The ed class for music.
Yeah.
And he got out Dr. James Dobson's book. And James Dobson is known more as a theologian than he is, but he was an educator before that.
Yeah.
And in his book, he talks about kinesthetic and visual and audio learners. And that everybody is a combination of them both, but one of them is primary. And the e-learning is because, like like you said, going to a project-based thing, it's helping these. It's actually the kids who do better in a class where you lecture. It's probably hurting them more than it is the kids who always got left behind because they were kinesthetic learners. You know. Yeah.
But this allows you to tailor it to that.
Correct.
That's kind of my point. You don't have to go one way.
Yeah.
But here's the downside, if there is one. That, and to me, it's not a downside. It's an opportunity. The teachers' unions have had such a stranglehold on what happens at your brick and mortar school.
Yep.
They've feared and loathed this coming to fruition.
Yep.
Ohio, in particular, had a fantastic e-learning program called ECOT, the Electronic Classroom of Tomorrow. Every year, this program, every year, this program would graduate thousands of kids from across the state, and the teachers' unions and the politicians hated it so much that they ended up suing them right out of existence.
To just have to go back and do it for everybody, not even a year later.
And have it where they could have been that much further ahead. But they couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole nother can of worms, and Sean and I both agree and disagree on certain aspects of that whole thing. And that I'm not, that's a whole nother podcast if we want to talk about ECOT and all of that, and you know, but I don't know. Again, you know, the individualized educational plan that you can put out, I just said IEP in an unintentionally, that you know, we can create from a online learning scenario for the students is phenomenal. I think what happens is you look at a lot of educators today, and it's mostly not people who are college educators, because the way they teach things in college is so different than the way they teach things in the public schools. Like, it's not uncommon for like a history class or something where it's mostly book and lecture type learning at a college, you know, to be 300, 400, 500. Heck, I sat in one that was 600 people at Wright State when I was a freshman in Wright State. In high school, they put 30 kids in those classes. Why? One, it's not, particularly if it's like if you're a junior and senior in high school and they're preparing you, like most school districts, Oakwood, Springbrook, their job that they see, because the way they get the property tax income to keep the schools paid for, is that, you know, 99% of our graduates go to college. You know, 89% of those kids who go to college graduate with a degree, you know. And those schools aren't taking the juniors and seniors and really preparing them for the way academia is in college. Because it's at extremes. In college, depending on your program, you could spend your 4 years of college in classes where the smallest class size is 100 people, you know, and your interaction is with the professor is either during office hours, email, or through a TA. The flip side of that is you get in classes because you're a music major or an art major or a specific type of engineering major in the upper level engineering classes, and it's you and eight other kids, and you get all kinds of concentrated time with a professor to pick their brain and do things. Yeah. When you're in in-person class, how do high school classes work? Well, we want no more than 30 kids per class, and we're going to push it. They always push it to 30 kids per class, unless it's something that's really nonsensical to teach at the high school level, in my opinion, you know, which is a lot of the elective classes, you know, because those are so specialized that, you know, and yes, I understand that's another argument, but that we'll go into in our education episode. But for those larger lecture classes as they get older, why aren't they combining those and utilizing a teacher and maybe an assistant teacher or co-teaching it like they do at the elementary level? You know? Because...
Well, because that's too hard. It's just too hard.
Why would it be too hard? They are college, too hard. They're college graduates.
It's just too hard.
As a matter of fact, many times, they're college graduates with advanced degrees.
It's just too hard.
Yeah, it's unmanageable. They've determined that the manageable size for children at whatever age is that many people in a classroom.
That's not true.
You want to put 50 first graders in a classroom?
No, I'm not talking about first graders. I said upper level high school students.
Yeah, well, I think is it a state guideline? Is there other state guidelines around that?
I think it's typically a local guideline. Because Mason Public Schools has actually been doing it.
So what is Spring Grove classes? What sizes are those, like junior, senior?
They're,
I know Oakwood is around 25, 30 a classroom.
It's about 25, 30 a classroom. But Spring Grove is at the point, again...
And they won't go higher than that.
Where, if they don't send kids off to do PS... Well, when my daughter graduated from Springboro in the spring, if all the kids who went to Miami and Sinclair and other school local colleges and university taking PSEO or College Credit Plus classes, to where they got college credit and high school credit for, if they showed up to school every day to take 9 periods or 8 periods a day of classes... There wouldn't have been enough seats in the school for all those kids. This year, the population in Springboro, for some reason, COVID, and I have not had a chance to talk to some of my friends who are real estate agents and stuff to kind of understand what's going on. But because people now are at home and they're not going places, they're not going on vacation, they decided that they would, and they're working from home, they would buy newer houses. A house goes up for sale in Springboro, and within 15 minutes, it's sold. Sight unseen, sold. There's a real estate agent who has sold. Now, she is eye candy, so I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. But she's sold like 1,000 houses this year.
Single-handedly.
Just her.
Not on a team.
Yeah.
Working by herself.
And
they equated out some craziness, like almost 2 a day or something.
Oh, yeah. And in affluent communities where people want to move to, it's increased the freshman class coming in was 30% bigger than they thought it was going to be.
But
they're not the only... They're not the only ones who are that way. Centerville had the same thing.
Schools are going to be home-based anyway, so what's the point?
Well, that was the saving grace was that the school districts this year had the option of saying, well, you can go to school full time, you can homeschool full time, or you can go hybrid. So they're not having to deal with that, and hopefully, going forward, they will keep that model.
I don't see why they wouldn't.
It becomes control. It's like the schools who used to have. Before I moved to Ohio, I went first 2 years of school. Where we had an open campus. So the only requirement was that you had to be in your seat for your classes. But like if lunch came along and you had an hour for lunch, you could go off campus and it was common to either walk to the local pizza place or drive down to McDonald's and get lunch and come back to school. But when I moved to Springboro as a junior in high school, they were closed campus. You couldn't leave without permission from your parents. And even today, the kids who do the College Credit Plus, they can either not come to school and then sign into school, but then they have to stay at school until the end of the school day, or they can come to school on time, leave early and sign out, but they're not allowed to come back to school, which, frankly, I think is stupid. And that was before COVID.
What's funny about Oakwood is my kids came home every single day for lunch because the school's so small and the cafeteria's so small that they got in line to eat at the cafeteria. They could not get through the line before lunch was over. So my daughters are like, why stay? I'm like, why don't you stay? Why don't you ever eat at the cafeteria? They're like, kidding me? Couldn't even get to the line quick enough.
Yeah.
That's kind of ridiculous.
Well, I think that wraps it up for this episode. We want to hear from you. Let us know what you think. Are we right? Are we wrong? Is there something you think we should add? Send it to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
To Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.